as the Melech Teichel Mayim Yishua Tishke is not a necessity. It means, even if it's necessary for you in order to study Torah, to eat as the Melech Mayim Yishua, you have to do it. It's not a necessity, but that every Talmud Chochem has to pursue Dafke to live a life with hardship and poverty. But the mitzvah of Vogisa begin Lilo Yomusha Zachim Picho in regard to those who are capable of being Mukhta Bitisha Shofero to Rosin Nose is Lyomusha Tewa Zemi Picho Kipshute. So that's the Pshat in Yerushalmi. There, someone asked Rabbi Yeshua whether one is allowed to study Chochmah Yevanis. So Rabbi Yeshua said to him, say a day like Rabbi Shmuel in Menachas, say a day sure she in El Yehim alive. So Yerushalmi, the Makshin in the Abba Mini Esyomi, that Rabbi Shmuel's answer was, and Rabbi Yeshua's answer was in respect to everybody. Respect everybody. No Jew is allowed to study Chochmah Yevanis except Shor Shein Elin Alayim. So Yerushalmi is the Kashi. Miato also Lelamed is Mei Yevanis. Mishim Shinem Al Yomosh Tzit Hatir Azem Epicho. Votone Rabbi Yishmoel Ubocharto Bachayim Zunnes Elo. The reason as to why one is not allowed to study Chochmah Yevanis because there was a special insert. Oh, she lamed his name Chochmah Yevanis at that time when there was the conflict between Hulkenes and Aristobulus. So then they asked Chochmah Yevanis code language according to the Rambam and Rabbi Goyen because it was a means towards Mesira that was employed by the assimilated Jews. So the Yerushalmi is saying, this is what the Yerushalmi is saying. True that Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Shmuel said that one cannot study Chochmah Yevanis because of the Bittul Mitzvah of Yomus Sefer HaTorah Zanipicho. That's in respect to Ben Dome. Ben Dome said to Rabbi Shmuel, Kini Ani Shalomadeti Kol HaTorah Kolei, imagine Kol HaTorah Kolei. Small thing. So he was certainly Mukhta B'Kisrei Shel Teiro. And he was wrong to be Mukhta B'Kisrei Shel Teiro. He had the inclination and the potential and he was steeped in Torah. So vis-a-vis Ben Dome. So he has to be kind, the mitzvah korol, to be Mukhta B'Kisrei Shel Teiro. So Meir L'Yomush means, Mamish L'Yomush, you can't study any Chochmah Yevanis. You can't study any Chochmah Yevanis. But Mashiachi, but the Kashi is, how can one teach an umnes? Can an umnes to his son? L'yomush? The answer is no. L'yomush vis-a-vis an every Jew. L'yomush doesn't mean mamish l'yomush. Without his staff, then everybody is mevatel the mitzvah of l'yomush. The most Orthodox Jews, who is the, I don't think there is a single Jew. Daily, not Shayach, but not daily. There is a single Jew who is not in Siyah Das from learning the beforehand. I don't think there is such a Jew. I don't think there is such a Jew. So, because vis-a-vis an ordinary Jew, so he almost implies only Kriyasit Mateo. Of course, if he learns more, so he has an extra mitzvah, the goyim mishnis liyol. If he learns about 2 hours, he has more of a mitzvah than if he learns 1 hour. If he learns 3 hours, he has more of a mitzvah. If he learns 4 hours, he has more of a mitzvah. But to say that every Jew is mechuyev to learn every minute of the day, that's not so. And the raya is, v'yosafti v'necho, hanim v'necheres v'bacharta v'chayim v'umnes. So Rabbi Shmuel said that to Ben Dome, and Rabbi Shua also said in respect to those who are ready and capable of being Mukhta B'Kisrei Shel Teiro, but vis-a-vis vis-a-vis a regular Jew. He's not allowed to study Chochma Yevonis either, because of a special reason, because there was a Nisa, all Shilami, Odom is Ne Yevonis. So that's the Pshat in the ocean. I have it now, 10:15. That means I have still an hour. So that's the first part. Now is the matching of each one of the five respective approaches to the unique peculiarities of the individual in terms of background, talents, inclinations, and interests. So that means that it's not that every Jew is required to pursue a Torah or other program because of all the five perspectives. It all depends who. Someone who is involved in Torah learning, he doesn't have to study science as a medium towards Avodas Hashem. That's ridiculous. How many scientists do we have today who attained Avodas Hashem through the medium of studying nature? You can count them on the fingers. But because the primary source of Avodas Hashem is involvement in Torah, but some, not everyone, you can't expect everybody to be steeped in Torah. For those who have the potential to become a Gadol b'Yisrael and be Muchta b'Tisrei Shel Torah, so then they have to attain Avodas Hashem through involvement in Torah and not science. Reb Chaim Brisker did not have to study physics and chemistry and biology in order to attain Avodas Hashem. But someone who is a Yirei Elokim and he is not Muchta, he is not in the position to be Muchta b'Tisrei Shel Torah, he should pursue the program of Torah and Mado from the perspective of a medium towards Avodas Hashem. Now the second part, areas of conflict and the way to resolve these conflicts. So I have here, I don't know, those who have the Maram Kainis and the outline should look, so they'll see. Roman numeral 2, areas of conflict and the way to resolve these conflicts. Then we have A, specific conflicts. There are two kinds of conflicts between Torah and Mother. One is a specific conflict. Specific conflict means there is a conflict between one halacha in the Torah and science. For example, there are certain specific conflicts that Rishayim discussed. Not only me today, with science having attained such great degree of progress, but in the days of the Rambam, the days of Tzadik Goyim, in the days of the Rambam, they discussed. So I have one in respect to shading ruches and mazik. Now the Gemara mentions many times about shading ruches and mazik. So many Gemaras. Now I don't expect to explain all the agadite, no agadite in respect to Sheidim Ruches HaMazikim, even though every agadite in connection with Sheidim Ruches HaMazikim has a deep meaning. But I want to discuss the halachas in respect to Sheidim Ruches HaMazikim. That is certainly not in consonance with science. If we understand the Sheidim means literally a supernatural being with black wings and that they are floating in the air, so then it's not in consonance with science. If you ask any scientist, even even the president of the Association of Orthodox Jewish Scientists, and you ask him, do you think that there are supernatural beings floating in the air and there are thousands of them in the right and thousands of them on the left? That's what Gemara in Brocha says in the Galate. So tell you no. So that problem arose in the days of Rav Tzadi Breyer, in the days of the Rambam, in the days of Rav Amiri, Rav Yitzchak Halbo. There were some who believed that Kipshute, but Rav Tzadi Breyer, the Rambam, the Rav Amiri, Rav Yitzchak Halbo, and I don't know about the Rambam, but I don't think that the Rambam believed in Kipshute. I don't know that the Rambam believed. There were some who believed Kipshute. Rav Yehuda HaChosid apparently believed the Shadim is Kipshute. But Rambam, I don't know. Anyway, the Rambam is known that he did not believe that Shadim is to be understood in the literal sense. Now, I'm not going to discuss all the Agadate about Shadim, because even though every Agadate has a deep meaning, but no one is capable of explaining all the Agadate about Shadim. But there are a few halachas in the Gemara where Shadim are mentioned. So that I'll just say how the Rambam and the Rav Amiri explain. I say Rambam and Rav Amiri, not the Dabar Rishayim, don't accept that interpretation, but the Rambam and Rav Amiri happen to spell it out. And the other Rishayim could have meant the same way, but they don't spell it out. Now, there are several Gemaras, halachas, where Shadim Ruchas Mazikim are mentioned. There is a Mishneh Daphne Malef in Erev. Mi she'oitzioi sei listim oi ruacho, chutzlitzu. If listim grabbed a Jew by force and they took him out, chutzlitzu, so oi ruacho took him out, chutzlitzu, ruacho and shady mazik in the Tainach. So eile yalad aladamas, he can only move within his aladamas, not beyond his aladamas. So the Rambam says in Perush HaMishneh, what does it mean, Ruacho? The Rambam says in Perush HaMishneh, and that Mishneh, any destructive factor that is not visible, so it's called Ruacho. And the same thing the Rambam says in regard to the Mishneh and Madlikim, we say it every Friday night, Hamchabes Haneir, Mitnei Shum Misyore, Mitnei Listin, Mitnei Ruacho. What is Ruacho? So Ruacho doesn't mean a supernatural being with black wings that float around. So the Rambam says, Ruacho hi mashekirin bilosh bi'avye, melancholy, one who suffers from a depression. Now depression is a destructive factor. It's not something that can be seen. It's not something that can be seen. Now, so this is, in my opinion, the Gemara in the Agadate in Brochas that says that there are mazikim, thousands of them on the right and thousands of them on the left, and the maskilim of old used to ridicule the Chazal, the big chachom, the maskilim, that the Chazal was superstitious, they believed. In my opinion, and in accordance with the Rambam's Pshat in Perush HaMishneh in Eirabit and in Shabbos, what does it mean, Mazikim? Mazikim means germs. And the germs in the air, thousands of them on the right and thousands of them on the left. And many masculine and divine, some enlightened Tyrell, I don't want to mention his name, a prominent conservative rabbi, he's not living anymore, I don't want to mention his name. So he wrote an article that the Chazal were very superstitious, especially the Amoroyim and the Chachomim in Bovel. In Eretz Yisrael they are not so superstitious, but in Bovel they were very superstitious. And what did he mention? He mentioned the Gemara in Shabbos, and I'm going to discuss because that's also Nazikim are mentioned in connection with Allah. So I think Lahari Sahamim Basorim Esyofer, and again, today, unfortunately, it's not only necessary Lahari Sahamim Basorim Esyofer, but we have to show Esyofer to ourselves. I'm including myself. So, the Gemara in Shabbos says, in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Tes, Tanya, Reb Nos Neimea, Baschiri Hizu, that's in regard to what is called in Yiddish Negelmasa. I don't know how to say it in English, Negelmasa. I don't know, I don't think it's translated into English. Nail water, I never heard such an expression. Negelmasa, everybody knows what Negelmasa is. That everybody has to wash his hands three times. So the Gemara says, that's Aloche. Tanya Reb Nos Neimea Baschiri Yizu Umakpedes Achirchatz Yodov Gimupon. So Rashi says, the name of that magic, of that Ruachro, is Baschiri. Is Baschiri. And that Ruachro is very meticulous, is very sensitive, that we should wash three times the hands. If not, that Ruachro will be naked. I mean, the Rashi doesn't say it. But that's the way people understand it. Now, what's the pshat? So, one prominent conservative rabbi, I'm not mentioning his name, he's not living anymore, there is no purpose in mentioning his name. I don't feel any hostility, has been shown to him as a person. He might have been a nice person. I didn't know him. He's a prominent conservative rabbi. But I feel contempt towards his approach, not towards him. He might have been a wonderful person. So he says that this Gemara points out how superstitious the Chachomim in Bovel, the Amoraim in Bovel were. The Yerushalmi, they were more broad-minded. I don't know why, how he got there that they were more, but I think the Yerushalmi also mentions Ruchas and Azikim. But maybe not so many times, because the Yerushalmi is not as big as the Bavli, so naturally, he can't mention Shevim, Ruchas and Azikim as many times as the Bavli. So, but anyway, so he said, the Rayim is from this Gemara. In such superstition. Baschirin is the shed, the mazik, the guachor is makpid, that every Jew has to wash three times. I mean, and they got it from the Persians, and they got it from this one, and from that one. They got it from the pshat is very simple. As the Rambam says, ruach or shed mazik means any invisible destructive factor. It doesn't have to be tangible. It can be tangible too. A microbe, a germ, is tangible. But it's microscopic, so you don't see it. I think this is the germ that causes trachoma. There were days when the sanitary conditions were not on par, so many people became afflicted with trachoma. And then the Gemara says that if one doesn't wash Negelmasa, so he can become blind. If somebody is afflicted with trachoma, he can become blind. So what does the Gemara mean? Shabbos Daf Kuf Tes, Baschirin. I think Baschirin is a euphemistic expression. It means just the opposite. El Benchirin is one who is makpid on cleanliness. And this germ that causes trachoma, it flies, it reproduces in filth, in unsanitary conditions. So the Gemara uses the term Baschirin as a euphemistic expression. Umakpedes achirchatz yodav gimupon. If you maintain sanitary conditions and you wash your hands three times, Bizman Chazal, so how could you wash it well? Today we have faucets and everything, you don't... Now I'm not saying Chas V'Sholem, that because of that, you don't have to use a kilah, Chas V'Sholem. because we are not at liberty to modify the halacha on the basis of the time. But Bisman Chazal, so we didn't have faucets, so the only way to make sure that he'll keep his hands clean was by pouring water from the keilah 3 times. Otherwise, he's exposed to the danger of becoming infected with trachoma. Now, I want to mention another Gemara. And I'm sorry, and I'll say, unfortunately, the one who translated Misecha Shabbos in Sunchino, I don't know who translated it, was also Nichshol. He was also Nichshol in this particular saying that the Chazal borrowed from the Persians, from the Babylonians, from all the superstitions, from all the Mesela. And I mention it in connection with a certain halacha in Misecha Shabbos. I don't see it, but anyway, that's in Perichio. In Perichio, the Gemara mentions the machlekes between Chachomim and Rabbi Yosi. Hamivashel v'chamitvari. Chamitvari is the hot geyser. Like in Colorado, the hot geyser is the hot springs in Colorado, very hot. You could be mivashel everything in the hot geyser, in the hot springs. So that's chamitvari. Exactly. Suppose somebody is mivashel on Shabbos in Chamitvari, is he chayev chatos or is not chayev chatos? So the Rabbanim say that Chamitvari don't have a din of eish. So he's not chayev, it's only osam the Rabbanim. And Rabbi Yosi says he's chayev chatos. So the Chachomim asked Rabbi Yosi, why do you say that Chamitvari has a din of eish? So Rabbi Yosi said, because Michlefe Apischa began. I remember I was a novel at the time after my father many years ago. So I used to, naturally, Mincha and Meirib, I used to come to Yishuv sometimes when I was in Washington Heights. So I davened in Washington Heights if I was downtown, so I davened in Yishuv. And Mincha and Meirib in Yishuv, and then I had to wait. So there was a Rabbi, very fine Rabbi, a big time prophet. And he was learning Misecha Shabbos. That Gemara in Chiro. The Rabbi Yosi said that Tamvashir, the Chamitvari, is chayev because Chamitvari is a din of eish. Why do they tell him din of eish? Because it's michlefe apischa d'gen. And in that show, there were a number of doctors, scientists, not big scientists. A big scientist wouldn't smile when you hear something that Gemara says that is not in consonance with science. He would understand. The Rav doesn't know pshat in the Gemara, but the Gemara knows what he's talking about. But he was a mediocre scientist, and he thought that he's a big scientist, so he smiled. And that Rav, unfortunately, explained the Gemara to Kshute. So he said, it has a din of eish, because Chamitvari is on the border of Gen. So one asked
Where's the doctor?
She said, since when is Hammy Fly and the ball again? He said, the more says so, he's stammering in the middle. Anyway, at that time, I felt personally offended by the attitude. After all, the doctors washing the Shabbos, I mean, they want to secular people, Orthodox people, why they have such an attitude? If they hear something in the Gemara that they don't understand, why they laugh at it? If somebody will hear a lecture on science, in Einstein's relativity theory, and you won't understand it, people say there are only few people who understand Einstein's relativity theory. So we laugh at it because he doesn't understand it. So how is it that when we hear something in the Gemara, it doesn't make sense? So why don't they realize that there must be means to that Gemara? The Rav doesn't know because the Rav didn't learn science. And he failed to comply with what the Rambam says, that one, that a Gadol B'Torah has to study Chochmas Eilam, so that obligation is incumbent upon Rabbonim to know a little bit of the science in order to understand the Gemara, and not to say, yeah, Mr. Amidus has a, that the Hamitraya is on the border of Gen. It doesn't make sense. So at that time, I decided to told more Cecil, that there must be Pshat in the Gemara. I decided to do research on the Indian of Hot Springs. So I didn't decide to enroll myself in Columbia University and to take a course in geology, but what I did, I went to the library. In those days, I didn't have Encyclopedia Britannica in my house. Now I'm richer, so I have Encyclopedia Britannica in my house. But in those days, I went to the library and I looked up on Hot Springs. So then, Encyclopedia Britannica. So I looked it up, I stayed there a few hours, and then it was mentioned that they don't mention Hamitlaya, but they mentioned the Hot Springs in Colorado, but different internet. So they mentioned that the Hot Springs in Colorado originated in a volcano. In other words, that there was a crack in the crust of the earth from which molten rock erupted, and that gave rise to the Hot Springs. So that means that the Hamitraya has its origin in volcano. It's a volcanic origin. So then I realized what the pshat is in Rabbi Yosef. Now, let's turn to the Pasuk in Yirmiyah. Perek Yutes. So Yirmiyah talks of the ancient Jews who worshipped the Moloch. And what was the Moloch? It was now we shudder when we hear of such pagan practices. So the parents used to bring their children to the pagan priest of the Moloch, and then the pagan priest burned the child as he sacrificed the Moloch. So, and that was done by Jews too. Sounds incredible, but this is a fact. So Yirmiyah says, Yan asher azavuni, vayinakru es hamokim hazeh, vayikatru veilelehim achirim, asher lo yidom, himo v'aviseyem umalcha Yehudah, ומולכו את המוקים הזה דם מתים, ובונו את בום יסבר, ולשריף את בניהם באש, אלי שרבו על השולי צדיסי, ולא דיברתי ולא צערי בי. So he says, ובונו את בום יסבר, ולשריף את בניהם באש. So, those who sacrifice their children to the Moloch, who are burned to the Moloch, so it's called in Yirmiyeh that they were burned by ash, by fire. Where did this sacrifice to the Moloch take place? Lochein hine yomim boinu adishem v'yikore l'amokim hazeh oid atifes v'geiven hine ki ingei ha'arev. Now, the Rambam in Pirusha Mishneh Chelek says, in discussing Geni, there he discusses Geni of Leon Abo, which has reference to the Einish, that people get Leon Abo. So, he says that the name Geni is an adopted name. It's derived, that's not the original name. It's an adopted name. Because the original name of Geni denotes that a certain valley that existed in Yerushalayim gave them in. But there was a beach suffering. So the Chachomim adopted that name Geni to the English Leon Abo. So the original name of Geni has reference to Geben Hinnom. That was a valley. Now the Geben Hinnom, you can look it up in every history book, was a volcanic origin. Why is it so hot? That if you placed a child there, he was burned to death. It was of a volcanic origin. And here, the Novi Yirmi says, "Uvonu es domi sabal, uisreif es neyem beish, eilis la boa la shalei tzibisi, uledi balti, uleos alibi," so he calls it eish. So we see that volcanic hit has a shemesh. So Memele HaMitzvaya is also volcanic origin, so it also has a din of Eish. Now, so the Gemara uses the expression Yichlefe al Pischel Geni. It doesn't mean passes by Pischel Geni, Chas V'Sholem. It means Yichlefe al Pischel Geni. It is linked. It has a certain proximity to the Geni. Just as the Geni, the heat of Geben Hinnom, he is called Eish by the Novi Yirmiyeh, and that heat was a volcanic origin. So the same thing is true of the hot geysers, the hot springs. They are also volcanic origin, but they have a din of Eish. That's the pshat. I mean, I'm sure that this is the right pshat in the Gemara. Now, to follow up the Gemara's Halochas in Gemara, where shed is mentioned. So, one halocha is where shed is mentioned is Makas Davov. Muscha Shomru, Afilu Mipiaku Mipieved, Vafilu Mipiatsmei, Vafilu Mipished. So now it's Hasloye can be made by everybody, even by himself, by the culprit himself. If he's master himself and he says, listen, don't do it, talk to himself. And then he's recovered as lawyer, so it's also good. So, but the Rambam mentions it in the Sanhedrin. He says, as lawyer, afil mpiakum, mpikotin, vafil mpiatsne, vafil shomakil amasred loiro. So instead of shed, so the Rambam uses the expression, Shomakil amasred loiro. So the Rabba says, Mashe kosav Rabbeinu, Vafil shomakil amasred loiro, Zehu lepidaitei mashe omru bigmore mitni shed. Vi Rambam yizkir shed, mitni sivo yidu etzret. So, in other words, but the Rabba is in the Tshuves. So he says, he mentions it because the Rambam didn't believe in shading. It doesn't mean he didn't believe in shading. Chas v'sholem, the Rambam, that the Rambam said as some historians, so-called historians, write, that the Rambam was broad-minded. He rejected all the superstition that is found in the Gemara, Chas v'Sholem. The Rambam understood shed in a special way, not shed in the sense of a supernatural being who, with black wings who floats in the air, but shed means somebody who is invisible. Invisible. So it can be something tangible, it can be something intangible. Ruacho, melancholia, depression, that's also a ruacho, that's also a shed. Any destructive factor, tangible or not tangible, that is not seen, that you don't see. If you can see him, then it's not called shed, then it's not called ruacho. Listing is not called ruacho, because you see the listing. But if you don't see the listing, if he disguises himself, then he's a ruacho, then he's a shed. Somebody who is an imposter, who doesn't want to appear, and he wants to trap people, you know, and to hurt people, he is mastering and doesn't even face him. So he's a destructive factor. So that is not seen. So that's it. Then there is another Gemara. Now the Mishneh in Gittin Daf Samach Vav. I think that I am exhausting the whole list of halachas who are shaving ruches and mazikim ha-menshin. I'm not going to discuss agadati, but halachas. There is a Mishneh in Mishneh Gittin Daf Samach Vav. Samach Vav. Misho yomush lach libeir. So, voma kisli getu ishti. Ha'elu keisli. So the Gemara asked the Kasha, Vileichu shem shedu. So the Gemara gives the Teres, Vichoze v'babue. And the same Gemara is in Vomes, at the end of the Vomes, after the Pali. So, if that we saw in shadow. So if he's a shadow, you wouldn't be able to see in shadow. So the Gemara asked the Kasha, but, Shedim also had a shadow. So the Gemara says, Because a babuye di babuye, a shadow of a shadow. Whatever it means, I mean, no one really understands what it means, shadow of a shadow. I'm not a scientist, I mean, to know exactly what the shadow of a shadow is. So the Miri explains it. The Miri Mikne explains it in a few words. He explained it as follows. In accordance with that proposition by the Rambam and the Miri, the Shedim, Ruches, and Mazikim have reference to an invisible mazik, a destructive factor, tangible or not tangible. So he says that we should be afraid, maybe it's an imposter. He said, Mushla b'shechabeya, and then from the bear he exclaims, Kids will get leashed. And it sounds like the voice of a certain husband. But it could be an imposter who can impersonate and talk in the same way as a husband. Lechu shem shado. How can you take it for granted that he's genuine? Maybe it's an imposter. You didn't see his face. He seen it, he called it, all right, but it's not always conclusive. So Gemara says that they saw his shadow. But Shedim could also have his shadow. Because of Babuy, Babuy. So the Miri says, and this is indicative of a great psychological insight by the Miri. In other words, when a psychiatrist today wants to find out whether a certain client of his is normal or is great, so, of course, if he tells him that he's Napoleon, then he knows he's crazy. He doesn't have to ask any questions. But suppose he tells him stories about his father and his mother, that his mother used to beat him. Could be true. There are such mothers. His father used to beat him. How does a psychiatrist today determine whether a person is telling the truth or is paranoid and imagines? So there is one criterion, the accuracy with which he describes. If a certain person tells the story that the father hit him, the mother hit him, So he asks him, how did he hit him? The circumstance, and if the account is accurate, it's not vague and not confused, so then it's an ayah that he's not imagining. But if, when he asks him questions about details, so the picture is all confused, he cannot give him an accurate description of what he observed, then it's a raya that he imagines. So in other words, here we have to be chayshish, not maybe it's impasta. That's how it appears on me. Maybe we imagine it, especially when a person walks in a deserted place. Sometimes it can happen to everybody. Sometimes you walk in a place and if you are under the impact of fear, you can imagine somebody's skull. It happens to everybody, to normal people. To normal people. I remember many years ago when I was a child and I was walking in Utrotsk, that was a resort place of Warsaw, when my father was sick, and then after he recovered, so he had to stay in Utrotsk for a few months, and I was the baby of the family, so, and my mother couldn't go with him because my mother had to be in Warsaw because the Briskarov's daughter had scarlet fever, so in Brisk we didn't have good doctors, so she came to Warsaw, she stayed in our house, so my mother had to take care of it, so my mother couldn't go with my father. So he went with my father. I was a baby, so I went with my father. So one night, I remember I was walking, you know, through the moms, my thoughts, because there's summer place, no one, and then it appeared to me that somebody is calling, and we didn't believe that. But when a person walks in a deserted place at night, so then he's under the labor, he's under the impact of fear, you can imagine a voice. It happened to me, I don't think I was crazy then. So, it happens to everybody. So, here somebody was Muslim Bay, a deserted place, and he heard a voice. Maybe he's imagining. So the raya is, if he has a clear perception of the voice, that he saw a shadow of a shadow, so that's a raya that is not imagining. This is how the Miri explains his gemara. So that's not my explanation. That's Lahari so Amila Sorin Esyofio Kitavas Narin. And I think that when one has an idea in the sciences, in psychology, so you'll be able to understand this kind of demand. If he doesn't have any idea in psychology, he will not even understand the Miri, because the Miri says it in a few lines. But this is what the Miri is. And that means now, two, in respect to spontaneous generation, I forgot to mention, in respect to the Morin Shabbos Bakuftes, and I'm not criticizing Chas V'Shalom, I mean, Sontzino is a very valuable book. It enables so many youngsters who wouldn't, without that, they wouldn't be able to understand Gemara. But in respect to the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Kuf Tes, that the name of the Ruach Or that has a memshole over Negovasa is Bas Chayri, and she is Machpedes, that you should wash three times. So in the footnote, Sontzino says that the Amoroyim Bavar, again the same Chochmeh, they emphasize, because one rabbi wrote that the Babylonian rabbis were very superstitious, unlike the Palestinian rabbis. So he says the Babylonian rabbis were influenced by all the Persian superstitions. So that Gemara of Baschir and Shmo, that was adapted from the Persian superstitions. Now, there is another Gemara that has been the source of, I wouldn't say apicosis, but something that borders upon it. That's the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Ches Haheri Kino. So Rabbi Gamliel says, Rabbi Lezer says, Haheri Kino Kiheri Gomor. If somebody kills vermin on Shabbos, so it's Chayv Chatos, just as if he killed, he can say. But the Rabbanon say no, that he's not Chayv Chatos. Why not? So the Gemara says in Shabbos, Perek Shmini Shvatim, that they both deduced from Ilim HaMidomim in the Mishkan. All Melochas are deduced from the way it was done in the Mishkan. So then it was Nishom in the Mishkan took place in connection with Ilim HaDomim. Ilim HaDomim. So Ahiri Kino Ki Heiri Gomor. So he says, Ma Ilim HaDomim, Rabbi Lezer says, Sheyesh bin Shome, of course Sheyesh bin Shome. So Kino Vermin also is a living being. And the Chachomim say, Ma Ilim HaDomim Sheporim V'Rovi. When it's Rashi says, Porim V'Rovi, I'll be Zohar on the table. Zohar on the table. But Kino is not Por of V'Rovo, I'll be Zohar on the table. It is Por of V'Ipush. Ipush means decay. So again, everybody says that the Chachomim didn't know what Pasteur discovered, that there is no such thing as spontaneous generation. There is no such thing as spontaneous generation. And they didn't know, they thought that the Kino originates without reproduction by Zohar and Kino. But that is not a theory, that was proven by Pasteur. That when I mentioned that Rav Utner, Zichron Livroche, so he became so happy, he was a big Balis Pilus. So he said, that's it, that's the pshat. And even if the scientist would say that there is such a thing as continuous generation, you also have to say as you say. Why did I say it? Because there is a very difficult Rambam. Now, the Gemara in Tzochim Daf Chofei says, Ochal Siro, Ochal Piduse Leike Arba, Nimola Leike Chomesh, Siro Leike Sheish. So Rashi says, Siro is a Sheres Hamayim, it's an amphibian creature. So in other words, it lives on land and water. So Mele is a Sheres Hamayim, but it lives on land too, so it's a Sheres Oret. And in addition, it is a Sheres Oret. So anyway, so there are six levels. The Rambam, but the Rashi Shite is not our concern. The Rambam Shite is our concern. The Rambam says that Siro is like a sheish. Why? Because first of all, it is a Sheres Hamayim. Secondly, it's a Sheres Oret. Thirdly, it is one of the Ifest Meis. Fourthly, it is a Sheres Oret. Fifthly, it is something that originates in Ifush. So there is a special love. V'lisutamos nafshaseichem b'chol asheretz oremis al oretz. So asheretz oremis al oretz is reference to those creatures that originate in Ifush. Like, you know, so there is a special love. And fourthly, there is a special love. There is a special love in respect to any insect that originates in Peres after it crept off from the Peres and it started to crawl on land. So that's the Gemara in Hu. So then there is love. So the Ramban is the Kashin, Sivra Mitzvah. How can it be on one hand is Chayav Malkes for Sheretz Horim Yisus Tamas Nefsechen HaSheretz Horim Yisal Oretz, and that love is reference to those creatures who originate in Yipush. And on the other hand is Chayav Malkes for the love of Sheretz Oretz, and the Rambam himself says in Machores Asures, the love of Sheretz Oretz has reference to those creatures that originate out of Zochon Heves, so it's a stirum neve. So I said that it's not that the Rambam didn't know that there is no such thing as spontaneous generation. Of course, Pasteur demonstrated that everything originates through Zohar and Kevah. But this is a fact. There are certain creatures, while they originate from Zohar and Kevah, but they require a certain culture. And what kind of a culture? Every being requires a culture in order to reproduce. But there are certain creatures who require a creature of Ipush. What is Ipush? Ipush means not food, the way we are accustomed to food. Ipush means decay, something life that disintegrated, that was once living and then decayed. So the Pshat in the Gemara, and the Gemara says, that according to Chachomi, Haheri Chino is potter of Chatos, because it has to be Dumye de Elim Amudomim. So it doesn't mean Elim Amudomim are reproduced with Zohar and Kevo, and Kino doesn't reproduce with Zohar and Kevo. Of course Kino reproduces with Zohar and Kevo. That was demonstrated by Pasteur. But while they reproduce with Zohar and Kevo, they require a culture of Ipush. And what does Ipush mean? Ipush means dafke, a culture, an environment that consists exclusively of decay, of disintegrated living matter. So the Rayin is, in other words, the Yalfuse from the Mishkan is, in order to be Mechayimus and Tulas Nishomo, it has to represent a high degree of living. So, Elim Amudomi originates with Zohar and Kevo, but a culture of Ipush, which is the antithesis of life, Ipush means decay, disintegration of living matter. So, if they require a culture of Ipush, of decay, of life, of heretofore life that has disintegrated, with a disintegration of living matter is the antithesis of life, so that kind of a creature does not represent a high form of living. So there is no chiyuv chatos. So what the Rambam says, which is a droshe in the Safro, there is a tamwes nafiseichem hasheretz horim yisal oretz, that it is reference to those beings, those insects that originate Nipush, so there is a special art. So Mela, there is no kasha. How is it? It's, on one hand, is Chayav Malkes for Sheretz Hasheretz Horetz, and that love of Sheretz Hasheretz Horetz applies to those who are originate from Zohar and Kevo. On the other hand, is Chayav Malkes for the love of Lisitamos Nasasechem, Bichol Hasheretz Horeimis Al Horetz, Una Sheretz Horeimis Al Horetz, has reference to those who originate Nipush. No, there is no stire, because Kino and all these creatures who originate Nipush, they also originate from Zohar and Kevo. But they require a culture of Nipush, of decay. So Mimele, there is a special one. Now, the last thing that I want to discuss in terms of specific conflicts. Now, I have here, well, it seems that I won't be able to discuss all the three parts, but I would like to discuss the first two parts, but I want to read to you what the three parts are. Now, Part one is that I discussed already, the matching of each one of the five respective approaches to the unique peculiarities of the individual in terms of background, talents, inclinations, and interests. Part two, areas of conflicts and the way to resolve these conflicts. A, specific conflicts. One, in respect to shaving ruchas mazikin. Two, in respect to spontaneous generation. Then, three, in respect to the chronology. So, in other words, that's not a general conflict. General conflict means like the theory of biological organic evolution. That's a general conflict. In my opinion, now I don't say, Chas v'Sholem, that anyone who believes there are many scientists, Darwin himself was a religious boy. Darwin himself went to church on Sunday, and Darwin himself did not believe in mechanical or organic evolution. He believed in the Bir Eilamim. There is a letter that he sent to a certain priest, I forgot the name of the priest, where the priest thought that Darwin's theory of evolution was inconsistent with belief in the Bir Eilamim, in God. So he said he believes in God, and he believes that God is the one who guides the evolutionary process. So Darwin himself was not an atheist. But unfortunately, those who accepted the theory of organic evolution with religious fervor, especially Julian Huxley, so he wrote an essay, Religion Without Revelation, Julian Huxley, and he calls the science the new religion. He was an atheist, but Darwin himself was not an atheist. Those who believe in mechanical evolution, they are atheists. But those who believe in creative evolution, that the Ribbono Shel Olam guided the evolutionary process, they are not atheists. And if anyone is a minion in the Torah and he believes in creative evolution, he's not an atheist. But in my opinion, the theory of organic evolution is a repugnant on the Ashkocha level. It's a repugnant concept, not because it conflicts with the apparent literal meaning of the account given in Bereishis. That doesn't mean that it's in conflict, because if you will interpret the account in Bereishis in a superficial literal way, then you cannot accept the geological proposition that the world has existed for thousands and millions and maybe billions of years, where the Pharisee soil was certainly a mining, the Pharisee soil certainly was not an apikeres, and the Pharisee soil is kumtre serachayim in the Mishnayos and Zikin. So he mentions Rishenim, Rabbeinu Bechaye, and he mentions the Sefer HaTmuno by Rabbi Nechuni ben Akone. The Ramban says the Sefer HaTmuno is written by Rabbi Nechuni ben Akone, and then he says that is also the view of Chazal, who say HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bein Olamos Umachrivon. So he says the count of 5,748 years, that relates to the count of the world in the present shape, but there were previous worlds. And Mimele, he mentioned the dinosaurs, the fossils of the extinct species, these are from the previous worlds, and he mentions many Rishayim. So the chronology is also could be considered as being in conflict with the apparent little meaning in Bereishis. But we don't have to interpret everything the way it appears on the surface. Now there is a story about Reb Chaim Volozhiner. When Reb Chaim Volozhiner decided to found the yeshiva in Volozhin, So Reb Chaim HaVishachta, can I ask for 15 minutes of grace? Yes? Oh, that's right. So because in another 4 minutes I have to stop. So I'm given 15 more minutes of grace. So somebody wrote one of the daily, not Echad Mashuk. So he protested against Reb Chaim Voloshin's endeavor to found the Yeshiva in Voloshin. He says, why do you have to build the Yeshiva in Voloshin? In every shtetele, you have a bismetresh. And in that bismetresh, in those days, in the days of Chaim Voloshin, even today in Borah Park, so you have hundreds of people learning the Hayom. Imagine in the days of Reb Chaim Voloshin, Reb Chaim Voloshin, so in every bismetresh, you had Jews who studied Shas. Bavli, Yerushalm, he says, every bismetrish in the big yeshiva, you have to build a yeshiva in Voloshin. So Reb Chaim Voloshin answered him, yes, in every shtetl, in a bismetrish is a yeshiva. And they learn shas, but some of those who learn shas in the bismetrish in every shtetl, when they learn the Gemara in Tzochim, am horetz mutal in eiche b'yim akipurim shachaliyiz b'shabes. So they explain it to Pshutim. In other words, if you meet an Amhoretz and you meet Pshutim Shcholim Shabbos, you can kill him. So that's not the way to learn it. Some Gemores cannot be interpreted to Pshutim, but you have to interpret them with subtlety and you have to analyze it in depth. So that's why we need a Yeshivim Voloshin in order to understand the Gemore in depth. And not just according to the apparent little meaning. So what is true? What is true of aloches, like amoras mutol neichi b'makpurim shchalu b'shabes, is also true of certain things, let's say like the chronology of the world. So true, according to the apparent literal meaning. I emphasize apparent literal meaning. So it means that the world has existed only for 5,748 years. But there are proofs of the fossil record of the dinosaur and the dinosaur soil was the mining and is one of the daily. And he writes that those fossils of the dinosaurs and all the other extinct species, they are from the previous worlds. And what does it mean, the previous world? The previous world means, it doesn't mean that Mamesh, it turned into nothing. If it turned into nothing, we couldn't have any extinct species like the dinosaurs. It means that the change was not in the structure of the universe. So there were previous worlds. So the Pharisee Soil says that that count, that chronology of 5,748, in his days it was less than 5,748, that relates to the count of this present world in its present shape. But the world in its entirety is much older than 5,000. All right, so that's a specific conflict. So the way to resolve the specific conflict is not by closing our eyes and say, we don't know. You see that Pharisee Yisrael didn't close his eyes. And he says it's true and the contrary, and he mentions many Gemores, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ben Yilam Mishumach Tivon. Then he mentions a Gemore in Chagiga Daf Yud Gimel, Dovo Tzivo Lelebdeya. So what does it mean, Dovo Tzivo Lelebdeya? That there were certain people, human beings, who were created and who existed before the Mauritian. Before the Mauritian, 974 days before the Mauritian, human beings. Charles Yisrael mentioned it. So, what's a day? Because Matan Torah took place 26 days after the Bria for the Mauritian and Chava. So, Dobo Tzibor, a day means that human beings existed, different human beings, but we don't know The Torah tells us of the nature of Adam and Chava, but the other human beings that and the other species that existed in the previous world, the Torah doesn't tell us. The Torah doesn't tell us, but this Gemara in Chagige so points out that this Gemara in Chagige tells us that they were human beings. They were not like us, I mean, but they were intelligent beings who existed for 974 generations before the Bria for the Morishin. So that's the way to resolve the specific conflicts. But then there is general conflict. What is general conflict? General conflict means it's not a question of one thing being in conflict with science. It's the whole approach. In my opinion, the theory of organic evolution is an Ashkofa level, is a repugnant Ashkofa. That doesn't mean that if somebody believes in organic evolution and he believes that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam guided in the course of the millions of years the evolutionary process that is not chaos, Chas v'Shalom. It can be a good Jew, but it's a repugnant Ashkofa. Now, Rabbi Yisif Albon Sefer Ikri says that they are Ikri, like the Yibgimu HaMimayins of the Rambam. So if one denies any one of these Ikri, so then he's a Kefir. And then there are certain Ashkofes that if one doesn't believe in them, he's a Chayte, but he's not an Apikeas. But he can be a Yisrael Kosher, but he's a Kefir. Rabbi Yisif Albo discussed it. Yes, I think, in my opinion, the theory of organic evolution so is in conflict with the whole ideology of the Torah. Not because it doesn't conform to the apparent literal meaning of the account of Reishis. That you can say about the chronology of the world too. But the theory of evolution is destructive of the whole ethical concept of Chaviva Odom Shenivro Bitzalem Elohim. So, if you accept the theory of evolution, so that means that men, like all other animals, descended from the protozoa. So, how does it fit with the concept of Chaviva Odom Shenivro Bitzalem Elohim? Of course you can explain it. In other words, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gradually evolved through an evolutionary process that in the course of millions of years men should become endowed with the Bitzalem Elohim. But that's a pshat. That's a pshat. And I want to mention one thing to the credit of Dr. Hertz. He certainly was not a big lumpen, Dr. Hertz, but I think he was a soil mummy and he was a Yehudi kosher. A Yehudi kosher. Dr. Hertz was very modern, and he accepts every modern theory. But in respect to evolution, he accepts the theory of evolution in respect to all species, except in respect to man. And he says he cannot accept it, because it is in conflict with the whole concept of Chaviva Odom Shenivro Bitzalem Elohim. They chose that he was in soil kosher and mind. In my opinion, once you have to reject it in respect to man, so you might as well reject it in respect to all the other animals too. And as a matter of fact, today the scientists, years ago, so the theory of organic evolution was considered as a certainty, but the scientists believed in it with religious fervor. Not like in a scientific theory, as Darwin himself propounded. But now there are many scientists who say that the theory of evolution is all wrong. And there is a book that was written by Francis Hitchens, The Neck of the Giraffe. What is wrong with how Darwin went wrong? That's the title of the book. She's a scientist. I think she's a lady. I read in the Reader's Digest in September 1982 an article about that book. So then I got that book and I read it. And it's a remarkable book. And she tells in that book that in 1966 there was a symposium held in the University of Pennsylvania of biologists, chemists, physicists, and mathematicians about the so-called neo-Darwinism. There is a theory of neo-Darwinism because Darwin himself, so he propounded the theory of evolution that every species evolved from a lower species. And according to Darwin, so the evolution took place in six stages. In other words, the first living thing that existed was the protozoa. And Darwin was a miner. And Darwin writes that he is convinced that the Creator created the protozoa. But then the other higher forms of living evolved gradually from the protozoa in six stages. So the first stage was the protozoa, then the jellyfish, and then the fishes with the backbone, vertebrates, and then the amphibia, and then the reptiles, and then the birds, and then the mammals, and then Homo sapiens. I don't know, six stages or seven, I didn't count them up. So, and he says, and how did it take place? Through the selection of the fittest. Of the selection of the fittest. So how did it take place? So Darwin himself, people don't know. That's why it's important to learn science and to say evolution should not be taught in Yeshiva University. That's nonsense. If evolution will not be taught in Yeshiva University, then it will be the greatest incentive towards apikorsis. And I want to tell you a story that I heard from my mother, Zecheinu Levroche, and the same story I heard from my uncle, Rav Nachum Krakowski, the Vilna Stockmann. So my mother heard it from a man in Rasein. My father's first rabbonis was in Rasein. And so there was Fischl Bear, Tom Kochen, in Moscow. So he told my mother the story, and I heard it also from Nachum Krakowski. Darwin died in the year 1882. The death of Darwin sparked a wave of intellectual radicalism among Jewish youth. While he was alive, so he didn't mark any intellectual revolution, but when it was mentioned in the newspapers, Darwin died, then many Jewish youngsters started to believe in Darwin. Because of the articles, Darwin discovered that men evolved from the monkey. Darwin never said from the monkey, he said from protozoa, but not from the flat, from the monkey, he didn't say. But anyway, it doesn't make any difference. So that became popular. So in Kovne, there was a meeting that was in 1885. Rav Nachum Krakowski was a young boy at the time. He was not married yet, my uncle. He attended that meeting, and Rabbi Trochonon attended that meeting. And then, in those days, he also had kanoi. So there was one kanoi rov, I won't mention his name. So he said that the rabbonim have to do one thing, to issue a chirat against anyone who studies Darwin's theory of evolution, because it's a source of apikorsis. So Rabbi Tzikol Chonon and Alexander Meisha Lapidus, who was Rav in Rasein then, So they both said, Chas v'shalom, if you miss your hair against anyone who studies Darwin, so then mind moving in talk, it will promote apikos. If you miss your hair, you can do it. Then Rav Simcha Zissel, Ziv, the Balamusa, Rav Yisroel Salanter, I'm telling, Rav Yisroel Salanter astounded. So he said, he doesn't understand, I don't want to mention the name of the Rav Kanoi, who was fighting for a chirim against anyone from his dad. So he said, he can't blame Darwin for propounding such a theory of organic evolution that men descended from other from Molechai, he says. It's very natural. Whom does Darwin, that's what the simple little said, whom does Darwin meet? The British lords who act, I mean, who are only interested in waging war, and they don't know of any obligation in Nodno Havere. So it's very natural to assume. I mean, why is that? Mesa Rodom Labemoy in Kiraka Lovel, Eibal Chai, so what is Nikiche, Mishiche, Rvite, Vite, and then also Nikiche, Nikiche, Mishiche, Rvite, Vite. So he said that the main motive in life, the universal principle in life, is survival of the fittest, survival of the strongest. It's very reasonable. If Darwin had mingled with people, with individuals like my Rebbe, the Rishon Hunter, he couldn't have said such a ridiculous theory that man is descendant from animals, because there is such a difference. But he never met with these people like himself on that. You want him, he turned to the Kanoia and he said, you want to fight at the process? You want to counteract Darwin's theory? Why don't you try to inculcate moral values that people should behave like a before Volanta? Then no one will accept this ridiculous theory. This ridiculous theory of organic evolution. So Rav Nachman, my mother heard it from Fischl Bear, and Rav Nachman Krakowski, he was in Adria, and he heard it what the Simcha Zissel Ziv said to the Rav de Kanoi. But today, this lady, I think she's a lady, her name is Frances Hitchens, she wrote...
Near or not?
What?
Frances with a near or not?
I. So what does that mean?
Then it's a man.
Then it's a man, okay.
No riot.
I think it's with an eye. I mean, I'm not sure, but I think it's an eye. Because if it had been with me, I would have remembered. Because usually Francis, I know Francis with an eye. I don't even know Francis with an E. Francis with an eye, I know many whose name is Francis with an eye. I didn't know. All right, anyway. What could be a man? I don't know. Francis Hitchens. So he writes in 1966, so there was a symposium of biologists, chemists, geologists, physicists, and mathematicians in the University of Pennsylvania. And then many physicists, especially physicists and mathematicians, started to attack and to criticize that Darwin's theory. Darwin at first, so he explained the selection, the survival of the fittest, the selection of the one who was more adapted to the environment on the basis of the Lamarckian theory. Lamarck propounded the theory that if a person acquires certain features, let's say a person becomes an athlete and he devotes himself to exercise, and then he strengthens his muscular ability, so then automatically his children will be born with muscular strength. But that theory was discredited. And Darwin himself accepted the theory of Lamarck, and he even propounded a new theory. It's called pangenesis. In other words, that every cell sends certain particles to the blood system, and then from the blood system it is imparted to the germinal cells, and that affects the nature of the offspring. But that was discredited. About 40 years ago it was discredited. And no scientist in the West, except in Russia, they still adhere to the Lamarckian theory, because it fits in their mind with the communist ideal. Because what? Lysenko, that's right, Lysenko. Because if acquired features can be transmitted to the offspring, so they can disengineer the whole future with daily theorem. All they have to do is to inculcate the communistic ideals in the people today, and then automatically they will be born full-fledged communists. So they still accept it. But in the West, Western scientists have discredited the Lamarckian concept and the theory of pangenesis that was propounded by Darwin himself. And Darwin explained the survival of the fishes on the basis of the Lamarckian theory. So the question arises, now that the Lamarckian theory was discredited, how can they explain the evolutionary process? So the neo-Darwinism was developed. And according to the neo-Darwinism, so how did new species emerge? As a result of a number of chance favorable mutations. So the neo-Darwinist said that how did the human eye develop? Because the starfish has a certain color, a red spot on its arm. So through a number of favorable mutations, so that red spot in the arm of the starfish developed into a human eye. That's how it is. So a leading physicist and mathematician, who is professor in 1966, he was professor of engineering in Massachusetts Institute of Technology. His name is Mori Eden. So he said that it doesn't make sense, this theory. He said, imagine the human eye, how complex it is. A human eye, so complex. How does the human eye operate? Light passes through the outer, the protective coating called cornea, and then it proceeds through the pupil, so to into the lens, into the automatic lens. Then in the automatic lens, it scopes over the back of the retina, and in the back of the retina there are 130 million of light sensitive rods and cones. How do we know 130? Under the microscope that magnifies over 1,000 times. So they were able to determine that in the retina there are 130 million of light sensitive rods and cones. And these rods and cones cause a photochemical reaction which transforms the light into electrical impulses, and then it is transmitted to the brain. So he says, he turned to the neo-Darwinist who explained everything on the basis of chance favorable mutations. So you mean to tell me that that thousands upon thousands of favorable chance mutations took place coincidentally. And in order to bring about the emergence of the lens and the retina, you couldn't exist one without the other in such a harmonious way. You expect me to accept it? Professor Morrigan, he turned to the neo-Darwinist, and he had no answer to give him. So he said, but how can we explain the development of the human eye? So Morrigan said, very simple, he said, you can explain it on the basis of the creator. But to say that it evolved by chance, favorable mutations of thousands and thousands of mutations, so resulting in the development of such a complex eye, which involves 130 million of a microscopic rods and cones, which is transmitted to the brain in such terrific speed. So this is as likely as if you are going to tell me that if you, and then he was alluding to a chokhmah that was made by Huxley at one time. Huxley said that if, he didn't mention Huxley's name, but he was alluding to it. So Huxley said, in explaining the Darwin's theory, so he said, if a chimpanzee will be given a typewriter, and it's not a big thing to teach a chimpanzee to type, that could be done easily, and if a chimpanzee will be given a typewriter, and then it will be given thousands of sheets of paper, and unleashed to type things, so in due course, this chimpanzee at random, without any talent, but Kisume Barube will type out everything, all of Plato, all of Aristotle, all of Homer, all of Thomas Aquinas, and all of Shakespeare, all of Milton, all of Longfellow, all of Victor Hugo, all of Goethe, everything. He included the Bible too. A chimpanzee would type out the Bible. The only two sworn that he didn't mention, for a good reason, is Chiddush Rabbi Kleiger and Chiddush Rav Chaim. But except for that, he mentioned everything. So Professor Morrigan, he was alluding to the chokhmah that was made by Huxley, who believed it, Julian Huxley, so the grandson of Thomas Huxley. So he believed in the theory of evolution with religious fervor. It wasn't a scientific theory. It was, he called his essay, the title of the essay is, I think, Religion Without Revelation. Religion without revelation was a religion to him. So he was alluding to it. So he said, to say that the complex human eye, which involves so much wisdom and so much calculation, mathematical calculation, 130 million rods and cones, that all that took place as a result of mutations, chance mutations, that's very ridiculous. It's like saying that if you give a chimpanzee a typewriter and you give the chimpanzee enough sheets of paper to type, they'll type a library, gigantic library of all the books of wisdom. I can't accept it. So then the fervent evolutionists among the biologists, they said to him, it's true, it sounds very strange, but we have no other way of explaining. So Morrigan said, well, there is a very simple way of explaining it, that there is a creator who did all that. So he said, but that cannot be demonstrated in the laboratory. In other words, they can't accept creation because you can't see God under the microscope. So, I don't believe in those people who try to bring suit and that evolution should not be taught. And even the attempt by certain people that together with revolution, so the Bible should be taught, I think it will be counterproductive, because who will teach the Bible in the public schools together with revolution? Evolution will be taught by a scientist who knows what he's talking about, and the Bible will be taught by someone who is an amorist who doesn't know anything. So then, so what will all the children think? That the Torah cannot compete with evolution. But, in my opinion, the theory of organic evolution is the source, and this is based upon historical facts, that was the source. Darwin didn't think it. Darwin was a nice man, an ethical person, but that was the source of the Nazi ideology. And I'll tell you a story. When the Second World War broke out, I was always interested in current events. And I used to read the New York Times, and then there was the Herald Tribune. In those days, there was the New York Post. I read all the newspapers. So when the war broke out, so a letter was sent by the German scientist, and believe it or not, Planck signed the letter to address to the British scientist. And in that letter they stated, how can you scientists, British scientists, how can you be in favor of Churchill's war against Don't you believe in the theory of evolution, in the survival of the strongest, the survival of the fittest? So Germany is the strongest. For 1,000 years, Germany has to rule the world. That was the maxim, 1,000 years. So why do you fight that? This is the law of nature. That's the basic principle in the universe. Survival of the fittest. So then, well, that didn't shock me. All right, what do you expect of German scientists? But what shocked me is the answer that was sent by the British scientist, to the German scientist. So first, the German scientist referred to Darwin's theory, survival of the strongest. So they made a correction and they said, Darwin didn't say survival of the strongest, but survival of the fittest. But the Germans believed that they are the fittest. So they said, the British scientists said in the answer, we are the fittest. So the whole machlekes appeared to be a machlekes in its ears. Who is the fittest? Whether Germany is the fittest, the strongest, or Britain? I saw him say, if that is the whole argument between, that is a tissue in the war against the Nazi beast, whether Britain is the fittest or Germany is the fittest. So I think that Simcha Zisel Ziv was right. In order to counteract the Ashkofe of the theory of evolution, we have to raise our children and our students. We have to inculcate moral values so everybody will know that there is a basic difference between a Balchai and a human being. But if we adopt the permissive attitude that prevails today in modern society, gay life, that's a lifestyle. Lifestyle. There are no moral values. No. So then, the theory of evolution is a very reasonable concept. So the only way to counteract the concept of the theory of evolution is not by issuing homing, but by inculcating.